I have no comment. That's how I'm opening the show. No comment. I have nothing to say. I'm just kidding. I have a lot to say. But having no comment is actually a lot of what I have to say today. So just stick around. We got a full docket today. We're going to be talking about disclosure, non-disclosure, when to comment, when not to comment. If you're going to comment, when you shouldn't comment. We talk about addiction. We talk about infidelity. It's a really packed docket of seven deadly sins. We got everything. I don't know if we got gluttony. We got most of the other ones, though, knocked out here. Before we begin, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Today's episode brought to you by TrustedPrenup.com, our opportunity to democratize prenuptial agreements for all of you, protecting everything that's important to you. TrustedPrenup.com. Let's get after it.
All right, Jim, I promise you this is the last time we're doing Rossini and Mike Vrabel. I promise you.
It's I don't think you can make that promise.
I don't think I can either.
You can't make that. I feel like you would have made it before, and it wasn't true then, and it might not be true now.
It's not true now. We got yet another clip that is incriminating or just in poor taste, and so we're going to use that today to open up
a
discussion.
I mean, yeah. It could be incriminating and in poor taste.
And in her case, it usually is. Yeah. But we're going to use that to then open up the discussion to the biggest PR disasters of relationships, divorce, scandals. And I'm sure you have several of your own and some insight you can provide. But I've got a few examples of what I believe to be the worst PR in celebrity relationships.
As long as I wasn't involved in any of them as counsel, I will have a lot to say.
Oh, that's a good point. I guess I should have run some of these by you.
Might have been good. If I go, that's an interesting case.
We'll move on.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's start with Rossini and Vrabel. The latest one is a clip from them playing a variation of Family Feud, where Diana Rossini's answer is just yet again not what you want to hear.
Okay, Diana, what is something you might close your eyes to do?
When you have sex with your husband or wife.
Again, this is...
I mean, something did go wrong. I mean, that's a fact, you know?
We can put the... So, yeah. It's the funniest part is that it's actually supposed to be kids' Family Feud, so the fact that she went to sex in general was crazy, and then also says sex with your... with your husband,
or wife.
And Mike Vrabel is in the Zoom with them, just kind of patiently watching. And so obviously it's just more of the same.
Yeah.
The internet sleuths have dug up dozens of clips.
Yeah.
I just want to first like hear your thoughts on how they've handled this, because I know you often say, shut your mouth, don't say anything and deny. But in this case, it seems to have totally backfired on them.
Well, because I think initially there was some denials. And the, I think her statement that she put out invited this.
Yes.
I think the statement, that's why like something you do early on in a PR crisis can have like a ripple effect that you then can't fix. Like, so that's why like those first days are really critical days. Like if in that, in the first instance, you come up and issue a statement like the one she did, you're inviting people to just latch on like a pit bull, like, and they just close the jaws and you're not getting them off. Like, and that's how it's going to be. And I they haven't issued any statements since. And it's like, you either are going to talk or you're not going to talk. And if you're going to talk, you probably got to keep talking because you're going to have to sort of defend your prior statement. Whereas if you just keep your mouth shut completely, very hard to pit. It's like trying to put a nail through jello. It won't work. Like you'll find a way to kind of slip past things and then make your first public comments have nothing to do with that topic, period.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm always so intrigued by this because from the internet PR point of view, I think of it as like, get ahead of it. Take like you control the narrative, but you're always
the
opposite.
You don't control
saying,
the narrative. The crowd controls the narrative.
So
there's more of them
way.
Than there are of you.
Right.
And especially, too, if you're lying. Because if you're lying, there's going to be a lot of evidence out there.
Well, that's
more than
guys.
You realize, right?
Yeah.
And even if there isn't, even if you're not lying, again, don't explain. Your friends don't need it. Your enemies won't believe it. They won't be satisfied with it. They'll still find circumstantial evidence and ways to sort of point to, you know, extraneous details that might look, when taken out of context or when placed into a different context, that looks like you've done something or you're guilty of something. So I just genuinely believe you can't go wrong keeping your mouth shut. There's very little you can say that's going to dig you out of these situations. And it's just better keep your mouth shut completely. And then when you start talking, just talk like this is old news. Like, mm-hmm. Is anyone talking about that? I'm not here to talk about that. That's the least interesting thing I could be talking about. And just keep going. That's it. Just keep moving forward, because it just will be used against you. Anything you say can and will be used against you in the public court of law.
So in this case, my thought, and if let's say this, if you have a client who gets caught in a compromising position,
it happens a lot.
Do you then ask them, like, is there a lot more that's hidden? Because in my thought, when they know they have 6 years of, at least 6 years of interactions together, my thought would be, you know that a lot more is coming. So maybe you do need to
The
to
first
speak.
Conversation that I have with clients, and I say it to every single client, is the two people in the world you should never lie to are your doctor and your lawyer. Mm-hmm. And anybody else, lie to all you want, but don't lie to your doctor and don't lie to your lawyer, because everything you say to us is confidential and we only have one job, which is to protect you. Mm-hmm. So I don't work for the government. I don't work for the IRS. I don't work for the court. I work for the client. So my job is to try to help you in the situation that you're in. So I use the example, if you kill somebody, my job is to help you get in as little trouble as possible for that. I say, you know, so just tell me the truth. And when I say, tell me the truth, tell me the complete truth. Like, and if you wonder, I wonder if he needs to know that. I would rather know it and not need it than need it and not know it. Like, information is like ammunition. I would rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So just give me as much information as possible. With that said, people constantly lie to me because they're lying to themselves. Yeah. They don't want to look at the reality of things. But again, I still don't think it's really so I can get ahead of where the explosions are going to come from, not so I can do like communication on their behalf with those third parties. Because again, I think the crowd, the pitchfork mob, you know, people who are trying to stick you up with information, people who don't have your best interests at heart, if they know that they're on your radar, you're giving them power. Whereas if you really have the attitude of like, we're not even thinking about that. Right. Like, we're not paying attention. We have nothing to say. There's nothing, no comment to make. That's it. There's nothing to talk about. You know, really that the sort of like the more that you do that sort of thing, it's just very, I think it's a steadier pace and it gives you the ability later when the dust has settled, because time is tremendous. It gives you the ability to distance yourself from the self you were when you engaged in whatever behavior it is that people are coming at you for. So like I call that the Robert Downey Jr. effect, because, you know, like if a client comes in and they've just screwed their whole life up, I will very often say, check yourself into rehab. And they're like, I'm addicted to nicotine. I'm like, great, check yourself in for rehab. Because then you come out and go, oh, no, that wasn't Jim. That was sick Jim. That was Jim who was sick. This Jim's better now. I went away for 90 days. I'm doing the work. I've really focused. I've refocused myself. This is because Robert Downey Jr. now can joke about what a train wreck he was and how many people he hurt and how many people he burned and how many. And it really, he did awful things when he was an addict. So did Mel Gibson. So did, like, there's so many people in recovery now who we've given them redemption. And by the way, like, I think that's great. Like, people love a redemption arc. People love a comeback. And I think when you look at people like Robert Downey Jr. is a good example of someone who, when he was in his illness, when he was in his addiction, he hurt a lot of people. He cost a lot of people money. He hurt himself more than anybody else. And now we look at him as an example of someone who really, like, you know, he had a total redemption arc. Now he can talk about it. Now he can talk about the people he hurt, the mistakes that he made. I think with time, a lot of these things, it's much, much easier to talk about these things. But you got to give it a significant amount of time.
We'll definitely touch more on that because that plays into a couple topics later. But
sure.
So Rossini and Vrabel almost handled it the worst possible way, which is, If you act like, what, who? I don't even know what you're talking about. But when you make that your statement, that's the problem, right? Because they were condescending, they were defiant. And then that rallies people to be like, well, we're going to prove it. And we're going to dig and we're going to sleuth and we're going to find
this
stuff.
You can read the comments of literally any post, including every episode of this show. And you will come to the conclusion that people have a lot of time on their hands. Because there are some people who just dig really deep into things. You know, I on my house tour that I did, There was like a half a dozen comments where people were like, you have to hang that TV.
Always.
I don't have a TV, by the way. It was a mirror. And if you watch the whole video, it says, oh, that's a mirror. I haven't hung it up yet. But I don't have a TV. Like, who the hell wants a TV in a cabin in the woods? But I, you know, like people really notice these strange little details.
Oh, you know
details.
What the number one is? Wires. If you have a
no
TV
wires.
These days,
no
that
wires.
If you have a single exposed wire, the internet wants
you should be shamed
you.
If you have a single exposed. There are no exposed wires in my home. Are you kidding me? What kind of monster? What are you, dog-eared pages and books too? Disgusting. My God, you shouldn't be allowed to vote. There should be. Listen, if you see wires in that many of those videos, it is right for you to come at
Isn't
me.
It so funny how those little things bother people the most?
Oh,
I know a girl. How about this? She was at a like a work conference where they did the icebreaking type activities.
Yeah.
She does not use the shift key when typing. She hits caps lock, hits the letter, and uncaps lock. Every time.
That's insane.
And one of her coworkers said, you should be burned
at
the
monster.
Stake.
Yeah.
And said it in front of the
whole company.
What kind
of monster are you? Yeah, that's insane.
Those things
what
just
kind
drive
of
people
horrible
insane.
Horrible person are you? I mean, that at least I don't have to suffer through that.
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah, but like if I got to look at the plug, right. I'd say, in my office, they know. Like, you don't have exposed plugs. Are you? Holy cow. That is ridiculous.
So wait, last thing on Rossini and Vrabel before we move on. Yeah. What would have been this current iteration of what they did, or if they broke your rule but came out and just said, it's true, we got caught, I want to take accountability.
If you're going to do that, that's fine. I mean, look, I think if you're going to do something, do that. And you do a Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly was caught up in a scandal quite some years ago, and he basically just said, he did like a, this is it. This is what happened. Da, da, da. And this is the last time I will ever discuss this publicly. That was it. Controlled the narrative, laid it out. But again, like, I think that's that. If you're going to do something like that, if you're dead to rights caught, just say, you know, this is a situation. Neither of us is proud of what occurred here. We both ask that you have respect for our families and children or whatever, that it, as we navigate this, we will have no further comment of any kind on this. That's it. And then you just leave it. Like,
so even though people know that that's like a PR crafted, scripted kind of a cookie cutter.
Well,
that's
some people are still going to hate you. I mean, you can't have a public life and not have some people hate you. In the comments of this video, there will be at least five people that are like, this guy's an idiot and he doesn't know what he's doing. Like, it's just the like, it's just what people do. I don't know. People, I don't know if it's bots or if actually there's some like
upset
people.
Yeah, it can't possibly
people.
Be that a human would ever actually like dislike
well,
you, Jim.
I mean, I just never understood people that like were like watching a video and then engaged with it in that way just to say they don't like it. Like, just, okay, just watch something else. Yeah. There are other videos available. I don't know if you know, like, with other people that you would might find less annoying. Like, go right ahead. Like, that's okay. But to take the time, that's engagement. You're actually, like, helping.
Right.
So thank you. Like, it's weird, you know? It's like buying someone's book to tell them you don't like the book. Like, it's kind of, okay, I'll keep the money, though. Like, so I just think that you know, it's one of those things that you have to have a thick skin if you're going to have any kind of public life. These are people that have a public life. You know, they work for, you know, he works for a big franchise. She worked as a journalist. Like, journalists constantly get pilloried, especially in the current climate, because people are so skeptical of traditional media and mainstream media, legacy media, whatever you want to call it. So I think that they're just, you know, these people have targets on their backs. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. Out of Office gummies by Soul. They are my superpower. They are my weekend getaway. They are my go-to. I can't say enough good things about them. Check out GetSoul.com. Promo code Sexton for 30% off your first order. These are the THC and CBD gummies where you can really control your dosing. Lots of different choices, lots of different flavors, but nothing but quality. Family-owned business. I cannot endorse them happily enough. Remember, GetSoul.com, promo code Sexton, and also check out the QR code.
Moving on, I think one of the worst PR situations you can find yourself in is when your public persona and your private life really do not match up.
It's bad. It's bad. When people found out I was a drag queen, they were like, wow. Wow. And it was just now when I said it. So I guess we'll see. I don't know
what
the comments.
Is.
I've always thought I had a good drag name.
What is it?
Sutter Homewrecker.
Sutter.
That's good, right?
Sutter Home is good.
Sutter Homewrecker. Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be my J. If I ever go drag.
I was going to say, 1 million followers, 1 million subscribers. We'll get you up on stage.
You make a lot of promises, and then everybody in the comments is like, "Jim, you promised that." I'm
if
like,
"If we get to a million,
I didn't say it. It was these guys." I would be
drag costume reveal. I have 1 million subscribers.
I am not doing well as a good-looking man. Would definitely not look good as a woman.
You would not be a sexy woman.
I would not. I would not be a good-looking woman at all. I mean, the heels might make my legs look long, but
made that ass pop.
It's just I mean, I'll give it a try. You know.
One of the best examples in recent years of what I just described is Ned Fulmer from the Try Guys. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They were like a BuzzFeed group, and they do like challenges and game shows. And this
they were like a Mr. Beast before Mr. Beast.
It was like Mythbusters mixed with Mr.
Mixed
Beast.
With that kind of weird.
And so he ended up having an affair with one of his employees.
It happens.
And but he was known as quote unquote the wife guy.
That
like
one,
his
I
whole
remember.
Persona was I'm married and happy and you should be too. And
that's rough.
And then it turns out not only are you fucking somebody, but it's someone from work. And then to top it off. After taking the sex in approach and disappearing for a long time, he came back and did a podcast with his now ex-wife or estranged wife. And this is what they discussed.
It's hard
to hear. Are they still together?
No.
Strange. I don't forgive you. Of course I get it. I mean, you're still very angry.
Yeah, of course I'm angry. You know.
What are you doing? Like, who's this for?
Not having sat in this position for 3 years.
Oh.
Yeah, of course I'm still angry. We lost a lot. I found out about your affair from the fans.
Ooh. He's just nodding along.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody sent me a picture.
Oh!
And I like.
Well, this is it's like hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
why would you do this?
So I was gonna ask: is this like the worst PR decision you've seen when it comes to divorce and handling scandal?
I mean, other than That's Will bad. Smith and Jada with the red table talk and the you had a what was it that she called it?
An entanglement.
An entanglement. You got in an entanglement. Yeah. That was amazing.
She like coined a word with that. That's used now.
Dude,
that's pretty cool when you come up with a phrase that catches on like that.
It catches on like that. Yeah. Yeah. I had an entanglement. That's a nice way of referring to that. Like imagine being like, when you found out about my entanglement, you're like, what is this?
I was entangled with that underage girl.
Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, this was, I can't imagine who the hell that was for.
Right?
I mean, that is a insane humiliation ritual to put yourself through, and it's certainly not going to make her feel better. I don't think like to sort of I really don't know.
I'd have to imagine she was like, I want my time to say my piece, and then when she gets there,
do that
like,
in a therapy session. If by the way, if they had done that in a therapy session, then I think it would have been her saying, well, you know, as we've talked about before,
that was like
the
first time.
But that felt like that was fresh. Like she was still formulating it, which is like, dude, you wanted cameras rolling when you had that conversation? Like that is rough, man. I mean, I don't know. You know, that's a really, I've represented a lot of cheaters. I've represented a lot of the cheated on. I've represented the paramour. I've represented everybody in that equation. And, you know, I think once you've spent enough time with people in each of those equations or each of those pieces of that algebra formula, the cheater, the cheated on, the paramour, you actually just see these are just people trying to feel loved and trying to feel love. And like, it's just, you know, this is a very, very human mistake. I mean, I've often said, whether you're religious or not, we all know the Bible has been around for a really long time. And God allegedly gave us 10 rules in there. And 2 of the 10 were don't cheat, basically. Don't covet your neighbor's wife and don't commit adultery. Like, thou shalt not kill got one, but don't covet your neighbor's wife, don't commit it. It really was like God was like in Fight Club. Like, first rule, don't cheat. Second rule, seriously, don't cheat. So I say that only to say that not that there's an omnipotent creator deity that's particularly interested in what we do with our genitals. I actually just think this has been around a long time. Like, this issue has been around a long time. We've been struggling. I generally think that, infidelity has been around like one day longer than the concept of monogamy. Like, I think it's like, you know, it's like one day shorter, you know, it was like monogamy. And then he walked out of the cave and was like, you know, and went after that. So I think it's just something that everybody's, you know, prone to. And it's something that, you know, you have to either control for or hedge against. Or I've been criticized sometimes by my staff. And maybe it's a side effect of developing a professional callus in 25 years. But like when someone says to me, and again, I might get beat up for this on the internet. It's okay. It's like when I said that motherhood isn't the hardest job in the world. It's the most important job in the world, without question. It's one of the hardest jobs. I agree. But it's the hardest job in the world. I took some flack for making that statement, okay, saying that it's not the hardest job in the world. Another statement I will make is when someone comes to my office and says, I can't believe my spouse cheated on me. I can't believe there's always some part of me that wants to go, really? Like, I feel like there's like an assumption of risk, you know, when like you are in a relationship with another person, there is a possibility they will cheat on you. Like, I'm not suggesting you don't have the right to be upset. I'm not suggesting you don't have the right to be shocked that you might be. But like, I never conceived of even the possibility. That's like, really? You never even, like, that's like I, to say I never considered that anyone I know would ever get cancer. Like, wait a minute. Okay. I was very upset to hear that someone got cancer. I was very surprised when I heard this person got cancer. But to say I never imagined I would meet someone who has cancer, like, people get cancer. It happens. Like, so to say, like, I can't believe someone, this person cheated. It's like, okay, cheating is like a thing. It's a thing that happens a ton. And again, it may be shocking to you. You may not have seen it coming. Maybe this person covered their tracks really well. Maybe you're a trusting soul, whatever it might be. But like, part of the assumption of risk of being in a monogamous relationship is that the other person may not honor that contract between the two of you. I think that that's a fair thing to say. If you're in a relationship, that's a risk you are assuming.
Last up, along the lines of the Robert Downey Jr. effect, there's John Mulaney, who not only had troubles with his marriage, but then relapsed, went to rehab, came out of rehab, married Olivia Munn, and had a child with her crushing in like it. a seven-month span.
Very quickly.
And I think that was another example of fans just kind of being like, whoa, this is not who we thought you were.
Well, and he also too did not, like, I remember when Zoni was like, oh yeah, he's got like a big coke issue. I was like, really? Like, he does not look like that. He looks like a dorky kind of, you know, he did not strike me as a partier, you know, like, and that's, it's just not a guy I pick. Like, look at that. That is not a guy you picture when you're thinking about the nose candy. You
know? This is him describing his timeline on Seth Meyers.
I move out of my home from my ex-wife. I host Saturday Night Live on Halloween.
Yeah.
I relapse on drugs after the show. I continued using drugs. You and some other friends staged an intervention, as you recall. Then in the spring, I went to Los Angeles and met and started to date a wonderful woman named Olivia.
Who I know well.
Yes, you
lovely
know
woman.
Olivia Munn very well. And she's kind of held my hand through that hell. And we're having a baby together. Thanks.
Congratulations.
And then there, his ex-wife is the one who, like, she put out a statement being like, our divorce absolutely devastated me, but I wish him the best of luck. And she's just kind of done with it, which, you know, probably should be the way these things go. But man, that's a lot to take in for,
you know,
the fans.
I think
part
of that is the substance use disorder piece of it. I think that when people, anyone who's ever struggled with substance use disorder knows that the person you are when you're actively in your addiction and the person that you are when you're in recovery or real sobriety is just completely different. And I've seen many examples of that in my life and people that I know. So I get that, you know, I really do get that. I think that addiction turns you into something else. Like, it turns you into a different creature entirely. And you are in your illness at that point. And, you know, this is, you know, cocaine, in my experience of friends using, I've used cocaine three times in my life, and it was all in college, and it was all to try to impress the same girl. And it ended badly because I'm just terrible with cocaine. I was like, I got jittery. It was, I don't know if it was just bad cocaine, but I did not understand the appeal of it. And now I would never even consider touching this stuff simply because God knows what you'd even get in there. It's not the stuff from the 70s, you know?
Yep.
But like, I have to tell you, when you, when you look at people that are on cocaine, like I have seen it just steal some people's soul. Mm-hmm. Like, there is something about those up drugs, whether it's an Adderall addiction, whether it's a cocaine addiction, whether it's a meth addiction. I've represented a lot of people, musicians, actors, artists who either fell into cocaine use, like extreme cocaine use. I've represented a couple of people, particularly gay men, who got caught up in crystal meth. And crystal meth in the gay community became like a big thing.
Really?
Wow. Chemsex. Yeah. It was like it's a big thing. There's documentaries on it. It's a really shocking sort of thing. And, but it really got very tied into gay nightlife, particularly in like New York City, Miami, and California. And, I mean, these are drugs that get really easy to get addicted to. And they completely steal your soul. They turn you into a different person. I've seen people like leave their kids in a car so they could go get meth. I mean, it's a really, really nightmarish scenario. So, but again, you know, it's the illness I think that these people see. And I congratulations to his ex-wife, I think, for being taking the high road there and realizing, yeah, this was a person in their illness and that, she wishes him well. That's really good. I don't know if they have kids together, especially if you have kids together. I think you have a tremendous incentive to have someone. I have definitely seen some people that in recovery, they start to deal with the underlying issues that brought them into their addiction. Mm-hmm. And they really do turn into totally different people, you know, and relapse is part of recovery. I mean, the fact that someone had a relapse, like relapse is part of recovery. It's part of that process. And there are a lot of people that think your recovery really begins the first time you have your relapse, because that sobriety, you know, bubble that you're in when you first get sober and how good you feel physically and how supportive everyone is of your sobriety, that goes away over time. And now you still have all the stuff you ever had that caused you to pick up whatever your substance was, except now you don't have that substance to numb it out anymore. So, you know, maybe you get addicted to work instead, or you get addicted to some other substance instead, or you find Jesus, whatever it might be. And, you know, that's something that, I mean, again, very few people wrap their car around a telephone pole because they're on Jesus. So that's okay. You know, I'm good with that. I got a lot of friends who drink a lot of Celsius and do those stupid nicotine pouches. Which again, if you're doing that instead of doing blow or 100 milligrams of Adderall a day, God bless, like you're not going to get yourself in quite as much trouble. But I mean, this is such a sober episode, like a somber, sober episode we're doing here.
Well, wrap it up with, I know the message in PR crises is to just be quiet, but let's say you've already spoken or you do need to make a statement, and maybe you're not allowed to use your statement.
Okay.
What would you tell the people? Is there anything other than, I have no specific recollection.
I have no specific recollection of any wrongdoing, although I acknowledge mistakes may have been made. I'd like to move forward past this unfortunate incident.
Like if someone came to you and said, I need to put out a statement and I don't want it to be like the PR cookie cutter. Like how should someone craft that?
I think simple is better. I think short is better. I think, for me to say you should be brief in your speech is kind of humorous. But I think something short and simple. I think it should be that... allegations have come to light in recent days. I have behavior I'm not proud of. I will address this further at another time. That's it. Something along those lines. Or that this is a personal matter that I'm taking seriously. That's it. I think you have to say something. If you're going to say something, you have to say something, but you have to leave room for it to be what it's going to be. And I think you have to be very clear. Like I think... in all communication, I am a big fan of being clear. Like, lead with the thing yours. Like, don't start with the, like, if you're breaking up with someone, the time we've had together has been so wonderful and I wanted it. You have to start with the thing. Start with, I believe we need to end this relationship. Not, I'm thinking about, I think we may have to. It's, I've come to a place in this relationship where I need to end it. And then you can say, you know, I've cherished the time we've had together. It meant so much to me today. But start with the thing. Be clear. And I think it's the same thing with a statement of that kind. Like if you're denying an allegation, deny the allegation and then say whatever else you want to say. If you're conceding that there is some truth to this allegation, again, you don't want to just say, yes, I did. Because which thing are you
addressing,
copping to, right? Like there's 50 versions of what happened. You had an affair. You had an affair for the last 4 years. You had this. You had look at any of these examples. So you might want to say, you know, there has been a lot of discussion about a matter in my personal life. I am not going to speak on this issue at any length except to say that I am addressing the issues presented. Something like that. Like, boom, that's it. Like, just straight meet it head on if you're going to meet it at all. Period. That's going to do it for today's Better Call Sexton. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon. Remember to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Remember to visit all of our sponsors and use our promo codes. It's the best way you can possibly help the show. We look forward to seeing you again real soon. Check us out on Instagram at NYC Divorce Lawyer. We broke the 500,000 mark recently on IG, so join us along there for lots of additional content. But for now, we're adjourned.